Just a reminder, our podcast deals with crimes that are often violent and graphic in nature, so listener discretion is advised. So when in doubt, leave the kids out. Now, please let us take you back in time.
Hello, old-time crime gal listeners. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to another episode. It's Melissa here with my friend
Shannon. Hey, guys. Welcome back.
I know. It's been a while. We're recording this in May, in case it will come out in May. I have faith. May is, what did we say it was? National Missing and Unidentified.
Yep, missing and unidentified.
So, apparently 600,000 people go missing in the United States every year. I think in the time it takes us to tell this story, like 30 people have gone.
That is so scary. It's crazy. It makes me want to be with my children.
And know where your kids are.
Yes. Make sure they're everywhere they need to be.
And so, since missing persons...
And who they're with. Exactly. Identify who they're with. Make sure you know them.
Background check who they're
with.
Or at least search the public offender sites.
I mean, do something. So.
Be proactive.
Yeah. Don't just assume they're telling you the truth. Because me and Melissa have great kids, but you don't always... You know, you can't count on them 100% to tell the truth. So.
True. So, we're going to talk about Mara Murray. And if you have heard that name before, I'm not surprised if you're listening, because it's a big missing persons case. However, Shannon has not heard the story.
I don't think so, but I had a baby the year this happened.
Well, it kind of puts you in the mind of Brian Schaefer. Do you remember that Brian Schaefer was the one who was on the surveillance footage going into bar but never came out of the bar?
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's kind of like that one. Like, there's a very tight window that things happen, and there's witnesses that, like, up to the 10-minute mark. Like, she disappeared in a matter of minutes.
Wow.
And, like, no one knows where she is.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. And how do you spell her first name?
M-A-U-R-A. Mara Murray.
Mara Murray.
And there's a lot of speculation about the case. So when this happened, Facebook was just starting. And so people were, like, sharing and then, like, getting involved and talking, putting their 2 cents in, and stuff was going around and around and around and around. There's a lot of misinformation, speculation. It's really hard to say what is true, what isn't true, what did happen around it. So it's really, it's just big.
It's a mystery.
There's lots of just lots of information out there. I mean, there's podcasts that do multiple episodes on just that. There's documentaries that have been done about it. It's a big thing.
And it's just so scary for any parent, and I don't care how old your child is. So, well, tell us about Mara.
Yep, so we were just debating this, it's been almost 20 years. Well, it's 19, but in February will be 20 years. So this is almost two decades that no one knows where Mara Murray went. So just some background information on Mara was that she was an incredibly bright, athletic woman. She, like, ran track, she played basketball, she did all sorts of things, super smart. She had four siblings, so there's five of them. Mm-hmm. She had two brothers, Fred Jr. and Curtis, and two sisters, Kathleen and Julie.
Okay.
The family was very active. They went on hikes, I mean, like, multiple times a week. They were just all close and involved. And at the time of high school graduation, like, she could have went anywhere. She had many college offers, but she chose to go to West Point Military Academy.
Okay.
And that's where her sister Julie was already going.
Okay. So she was going to go join her sister Julie at West Point.
Right.
So, yeah, to get in there is huge. That was a huge deal, especially in 2004. I don't know.
Well, at 2004, she's at UMass, so she makes a change. Oh, okay. When she graduates high school, she goes to West Point Academy.
Okay.
She meets her boyfriend Billy there.
Okay.
But then she decides to drop out and go to nursing school at UMass at Amherst.
Okay.
So she changes schools, changes tracks, but she still is dating Billy long distance. But Billy is also at West Point with Julie, so Julie's, like, kind of keeping the eye on Billy. Okay. And, like, what he's going on and all that
Make
stuff.
Make sure you don't hurt my sister's heart.
That, or, you know, cheating on her. Yes. With people who were there, because long-distance relationships are hard.
Yes.
So there was some tension there, and they did fight back and forth, and it's hard to just talk to somebody and not see them all the time.
Right.
And all that stuff.
Yes,
all that
is.
Stuff.
College. Even when you're married.
Yeah, yeah. When you never see your spouse because they work all the time, you know. It's hard, man. But, so, that's a little bit of her background. But there's some stuff that happens leading up into where she goes missing. But where she goes missing is, it's very detailed and there's a timeline. So we're going to start with the day of.
Okay, remind me where she's from originally. She's at the University of Massachusetts.
At Amherst. Okay. But her family is New Hampshire, like that upper.
Gotcha.
Because the timeline is like what everybody focuses on because it's so tight.
Okay.
So on February 9th, 2004, the classes are closed.
Okay.
The school shuts down because of a snowstorm.
Okay. It had to be cold.
Yeah, classes are closed due to the snowstorm. So they're going to resume the next day.
Okay.
Well, is not going to go to school the next day. So at 1:24 that afternoon, so classes are closed. 1:24, she turns in all her current assignments that are due, and she sends an email to her professors saying that she'll be absent the rest of the week due to a death of a family member.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to ask questions. I will hold my questions.
So that's 1:24 in the afternoon.
Okay.
Turns in all her work, sends an email, not coming to school for the rest of the week.
Okay.
So then she packs up for a trip. So she takes makeup, toiletries, her school books, school supplies, clothes, athletic wear, wallet, keys, cell phone, packs up like she's going on a trip. A few days worth of clothes.
Okay.
She drives a black 1996 Saturn SUV. So she leaves sometime in the afternoon. She's caught on an ATM camera at 3:15. She withdraws $280.
Okay.
Almost everything she had in her bank account.
Wow.
Just draining her bank account.
Okay.
And on the footage, there's a surveillance video of her at the ATM. She's by herself. So it's not like somebody's making her do it, that they can tell.
Okay.
It doesn't look suspicious. She's just getting cash out of her ATM.
Okay. But all of it would shut down the account, so that would be kind of...
Yeah, so I'm thinking that she probably had like $292, like everything up to the 20, you know.
So you don't think she, okay, gotcha.
So, like, because you can only take it out, well, now you can take out fives, tens, and ones at some machines, but it was more commonly like 20s back then, I think. So she took out most of her money. So then she's driving down Route 112. $40 worth of alcohol is bought at a convenience store. So they catch her on surveillance camera buying alcohol.
Okay.
She's also the only person. They don't see her with anybody else.
Okay.
So then sometime around 4:30, she leaves the area and she's driving north to New Hampshire.
Okay.
And there's 1 hour left before sunsets. Because
winter, cold,
it's going to be dark soon, sunsets early.
Correct.
So she spends, based on where the car crash happens, because there is a car crash.
Okay.
She probably spends about 3 hours driving.
Okay.
So she's just driving. But at 7:27 p.m., a lady by the name of Faith Westman calls 911 because of a single car accident she can see from her house. So this is a hairpin curve, and on this dark highway, there's no street lights, but there's like three or four houses surrounding the road that are far back enough, but that have view of the curve.
Okay.
So she sees a car that's been wrecked. I don't think she saw the accident because no one really knows what happened, but she sees the car and decides to call 911 because she doesn't know if anybody's hurt or anything, or like the car wasn't there a minute ago. Now I'm looking up and it's there. So she calls. So 7:27, she calls 911. She says she can see that the car is facing west, stuck on a snowbank. Looks like it went over the curb.
Okay.
But she sees, according to the notes in the 911 call, she sees a man in the vehicle smoking a cigarette.
Okay, so he's in the vehicle.
According to this.
Okay.
But then a few minutes later, there's this man by the name of Butch Atwood, who's a 60-year-old bus driver. He passes the accident. He pulls over and stops and ask if she needs help because she's outside leaning on her car. Like, I don't know if she's leaning because she's hurt or if she's leaning because, you know, she got the accident. She don't know what to do.
Do we know this is Mara that's leaning on the car or just a woman?
It is the car, though. It is her car.
But we don't know for sure if it's her.
It's a woman leaning on the hood of leaning on the car.
Okay.
He asks if she needs help, and she denies and says, no, I don't. I called AAA. Which, granted, is probably something I would say if a random person stopped and asked me if I needed help, because people are crazy.
I don't know.
I have sat in my car with the doors locked before, and, like, people have waved me down, and I'm like, go ahead, go ahead. Like, husband's on the way, go ahead. I'm not letting anyone come help me.
I know. Well, and you think this might be naive, but 2004...
I don't care.
I don't disagree.
She's 21 years old, and this is like a 350-pound... I mean, he's 60 years old, but still, yeah. Like, probably pretty intimidating looking. Like, you need help? No, I'm good. I called AAA.
Well, so was there a man in the car with her? So I know we're going to probably get to that. Because
he didn't see anybody. Okay. He saw one person. She looked visibly shaken, was his quote. Asked if she needed help. She said, no, I've called AAA.
Okay.
But he knows that's a lie. Because they're so remote on that road, there's no cell service.
Oh.
His house was only 100 yards away.
Okay.
He drives straight home and calls 911.
Yeah.
Because he knew that she couldn't call AAA. There, you can't get cell service.
Something
there.
Was fishy.
So his call went to 911 16 minutes after, or like just a few minutes after the first call.
Okay.
It's crazy.
Okay. Because he took the time to talk to
her. Yeah, well, he slowed down and stopped, asked her. But he was able to see that both airbags had deployed. The front end was, like, busted. The radiator looked busted. The car was obviously not going to run. So she did need some help. So he left 100 yards away, drives, calls 911.
Did he get close enough to smell anything?
I don't
okay.
know.
Okay. I was just going back to the alcohol she bought.
So at 7:43, so this is 16 minutes after the first 911 call, Cecil Smith arrives to the scene 3 minutes later, and the car is locked. It's 7:46. So his call goes in at 7:43.
Okay. Who's Cecil Smith?
Cecil Smith is the authority that arrived first.
Okay.
But at 7:43 was the 911 call, 16 minutes after the first. He gets there 3 minutes later.
Okay.
So he's there at 7:46 because he was responding to the call that
the first
Faith Westman made at 7:27.
Okay.
So when he gets there at 7:46, there's wine in the back seat, a box of wine behind the driver's side.
Okay.
There's red liquid on the door and on the ceiling, which I've had cups in my cup holder and stopped short and had people hit me and like, phew, you have that streak of liquid on your ceiling. So she was in a car crash.
Girl, we bought a vehicle. Well, we went and looked at a few vehicles that had Kool-Aid stains from children everywhere.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, you don't have to be in a crash.
Heaven help you. But, yeah, and it,
can you
it
do
took
it
us
for
a while.
Me instead of me having to
no,
use it.
No, because in my Mitsubishi, there's still spots where I got tired of doing that. It did work, but I got tired of doing that. Because I had spots like all the way up halfway to the back, and I'm thinking.
So was that her drink or was the wine broken? The bottles of wine? Or?
Well, it was a box of wine.
Okay.
The ones that you pop from the box or whatever. So they don't know what it was. However, they said it looked like Coke and smelled strong of alcohol.
Okay.
So was she drinking and driving? We don't know.
Okay.
I don't think it was ever tested. But when they walk around the back of the car, he finds a rag stuffed in the tailpipe.
Huh.
Okay. But if she had been driving for hours... And, because, like, don't you do that to, like, why do you put potatoes in tailpipes? Why do you stick stuff in tailpipes? It makes the car not work, right?
Right, yeah. But it could also, it could get the exhaust back into the car.
If she's got a...
If it's tight, I think it can get the exhaust back into the car. I may be totally wrong about that, so I can definitely...
Someone let me know why you stick rags or some potato in tailpipes. But anyway, because it was on the psych episode where they stuck a gourd in the tailpipe to stop the car from going. Yes. But anyway, she had been driving for hours.
I don't think it'd be
And
good.
She was in the dark on a snowy night in this winding country road.
Right.
I don't know how a rag would have gotten in the tailpipe. But it was there, apparently.
Right. And somebody probably stuffed it in there. Well, they obviously had to.
So, another account that happened later... After the news broke of her disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
So this person, she was known as like Witness A or something like that forever. But she finally came out with her identity and said it was her. Her name is Karen McNamara. So she's driving home from work. She passed the accident. She slowed down and stopped. Turned around to make sure everybody was okay. But what she saw was two cars.
Two cars.
Nose to nose.
Okay.
And the other car was an SUV police cruiser with the numbers 001 on the side.
Okay.
And so she kept driving thinking, hey, everything's great.
There's a policeman.
There's a policeman there. Everything's under control. And then on the news, they were like, anybody have information? This has happened. We have no idea. And she's like, well, maybe that was kind of important. So she calls.
Okay.
So it was around 7:37 when she was at the accident.
Okay.
So it would have been right around
the time.
Right before the first cop got there. Remember, the first cop got there at 7:46.
So this is before he got there.
This is before the cop got there. Okay, so then she calls in because she's like, hey, this is what I saw. And then they even call back to follow up and they're like, are you sure you saw 001 on that car? And she's like, yes, absolutely. The police were there. Everything was fine. 001 belonged to the chief of police, Jeffrey Williams. And he's nowhere near on any report that ever mentions Mar Murray. He's not even recorded as being on the scene.
Or being in that area.
Because when Smith arrived, he was gone.
Does this chief smoke?
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
But I do know later on he does get arrested for drunk driving and trying to drive off. And yeah, he's not necessarily a law-abiding chief of police.
Right.
But they never follow up with any of that. But they did call her back and tell her it was the chief of police. Like, are you sure you saw that? And she's like, yeah, I did.
Oh, wow.
Then they never hear anything
of it. She had no reason to say, yeah.
Because I was like, why? It's kind of crazy.
Yes.
So 10 minutes after Smith arrives, so he gets there. He finds no Mar Murray. The car is locked.
Okay, she's not found.
She's not in there. The car is locked. Rag in the tailpipe.
Right.
The driver window is cracked, but they see liquid that smells like alcohol. It's not blood. Okay. It's from a cup. It's not blood.
And that rag in the tailpipe might stall it or something. Cause you to kind of like run ragged.
Who knows? Maybe she stopped at a convenience store and someone.
Exactly.
I mean, who knows?
Right.
But her cell phone, credit cards, backpack, all gone.
Okay.
So stuff's missing from the car that they know is missing from her room.
Yes.
So she must have this stuff on her wherever she is at.
Any footprints leaving the scene?
No footprints. They're in the snow. Okay. No footprints.
Wow.
They concentrate west of the accident, even though everything points that she was heading east.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they did that. But eventually they just tow the car away and impound it. They don't even let her father know that they found the abandoned car.
Oh, wow.
Like, he just thinks she's at her UMass dorm just chilling.
So they don't even know anything.
They don't know anything.
Oh, man, that's sad.
And so they have no idea anything's going on. They don't even call him until 2:30 in the afternoon the next day.
Oh, my gracious.
And then it was just a voicemail saying that his car had been found abandoned. They didn't even mention that Mar might be in it, that Mar is missing, or anything to do with Mar. They just, hey, your car's been in an accident. We've impounded your car.
Oh, my goodness.
And he didn't even answer it because he's at work. So they left a voicemail.
Unless it's only registered in his name and they don't really know that she's driving it or something.
Could be. But, I mean, you would think you have a crash in the middle of the highway
at night. And people see a girl
and
they can't
find
the girl.
People have seen, even because Butch Abbott comes back and talks to because his house is right there. So when people finally start coming in, he comes out and he helps look around.
Right.
So you have someone who saw the car, saw the girl.
Right.
But you don't look up the car registration and find out like, hey, do you know who drives this car? Yes, my daughter drives it. Okay, well, she must be missing.
Right.
Like, just leave a voicemail the next afternoon when your car has been impounded.
Is this a small community? Probably.
But just doesn't make any sense to me. So none of this makes sense.
It really doesn't.
So that is where we're at for now.
For now?
Well, yeah.
There's more.
Okay. All right. So are you caught up with where we're at?
I think so, yes.
Craziness.
Nowhere to be found.
Car gets impounded. Dad's called the next afternoon. So, obviously, he didn't answer the voicemail because he was working. I don't answer my phone when I'm working and there, you know. It didn't seem like an urgent emergency. No one was blowing his phone up. So, he listens to the voicemail and then was like, excuse me?
Right.
What's happening? And so, then his daughter, Kathleen, actually calls and she's the one who figures out that, like, okay, Mara's missing. So, then, obviously, he's straight down, you know, goes straight down. like, demands that they start searching. But she still has not been declared a missing persons.
Okay.
Police decide to wait. They're like, we're going to give it another day.
Yeah, of course.
Because she's college age, and we're going to... I mean, abandoned wrecked car. Exactly. Come on, people.
Exactly.
I just don't
understand.
That
would make it different.
If anything, like, she could be limping and losing blood at this point.
Out,
like,
in the middle of somewhere.
Yes. Oh, my word. But anyway, police say, no, we're going to give it a day. Maybe she might just come back on her own. How many times have we heard that?
Exactly.
So then, of course, Fred arrives on the 11th, and it's like in the dawn that day starts the ground air search, bring the dogs out. Like, now they're like two square mile radius from the wreck, and the FBI gets involved. They do multiple searches. Nothing is ever found. However, there was a report that one of the dogs... great sniffer dogs, used a glove that was found out of her car and followed a trail like 100 yards to the east. So the same direction she was traveling in, and then it just drops off.
Okay.
Normally when that happens, it's indication of getting in a vehicle, yes, and where there's no more scent, and they go vroom.
Yes.
But there were two cars that lady saw, the 01 police cruiser.
Right.
So who knows? No one knows. That's the problem.
Yeah, this is crazy.
So someone is either lying about what they saw, or it's strange. And like we mentioned before, I think I said Facebook was starting up, so now this is when stuff starts rolling, and like media's everywhere, and they're sharing this whole thing, and then people who knew her were giving their 2 cents in, and people who knew of her were giving their 2 cents in. You know how online works. A lot of people talk.
Right.
A lot of it is not true.
Right.
So now we really don't know what exactly is going on.
Well, did she have friends that were, is that what you're talking about? Some of her friends were telling, like, she was.
So now they start, we got to go back a little bit to talk about what was happening in her life and how she was interacting with the people around her. More about her to figure, like, still the biggest question is, where was she going? And, because, like, who was she meeting?
There was no death in the family.
No death in the family.
Okay, so then she was...
So that was a lie. She was packing to go somewhere, but where was she going?
Correct.
And the question of, like, was she going to end her life? Well, why would you take your school books? Why would you turn in all your assignments? Why would you tell your teachers you weren't going to be back the next week?
Right.
I think she was just planning to go on a trip, and something terrible happened.
Got it.
But... Marmory, she had gotten into some trouble in the past. So another reason she may have left West Point. So a few months before this wreck, they were having a bunch of, like, stolen credit cards being charged to order food and delivered to, actually this was at UMass, a UMass dorm room. So they did a sting operation. They followed the pizza guy there that, you know, the stolen credit card was used to order food. Mara's the one who comes out to sign the slip.
Okay.
Now, it could have been a ring of people. It could have been a bunch of the kids. This is what they were doing. She just happened to be the one that was chosen to go outside and pick it up. But because it was her that went out and signed the slip, she got charged for credit card fraud.
Okay.
But the total that was stolen was under $250. But it does go to trial. I mean, still, it was somebody's
$250. $250, now they don't do anything.
Yeah.
So.
But
that's my point, I think.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
So the judge decided that he would drop all the charges if she could do 3 months of good behavior.
Of good behavior, that's it.
Yes, yes. I don't know the details of the good behavior, but...
good behavior.
Good behavior.
Have good behavior while you're picking up trash on the side of the road. I mean,
yes.
make
people
have
work.
Some kind of consequence.
Consequences for our actions.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yes.
But now, so the weekend before she wrecks, this is just the weekend before... Dad visits to go car shopping because her 1996 Saturn kind of runs rough.
Okay.
She needs a new car. Dad's going to go buy her one.
Nice.
So they spend all day Saturday looking at cars, but they just can't decide on one. So he decides, I don't really get this, because he drove down to visit her. Her car's running rough. It doesn't say it's broken down. He decides to let her borrow his Toyota Corolla for the night. And she drives him to his hotel and drops him off, drops Dad off,
okay,
so then she could use the car.
Right, okay.
But this is the weekend before, so she still takes her car on this supposed trip she's going on, so it's not in a shop somewhere.
Yes.
But anyway,
that
went
is
on
strange.
A tangent.
Yes.
So she drops him off at the hotel where he's staying, because obviously Dad can't
so
crash at the dorm.
So she's using it for a night.
Just using the car for the night. Goes to a party.
That's weird.
Goes to a party. Now, there's a lot of stuff.
I could have understood if he took the 96 Saturn.
Like, switch
home.
With me.
Yes. Yeah. I don't, that's weird. I'm with you.
Borrow my car for the night. But she's going to a party, so maybe she just wants a reliable car. He wants her to have a reliable car to get back or
what? But
next
time you drive home, just bring the Saturn.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Well, maybe they were going to go buy one they looked at. Maybe they were going to decide on one the next day and go back and get one. I mean, we don't know. Just, okay. She goes to a party.
Got it.
She tells someone that she has to leave because she's got to get her dad's car back to him, which doesn't make any sense because he's spending the night. It's late. Yes. You can bring the car back tomorrow. Like, maybe she was just trying to leave because it was a unsafe situation, or she was just trying to get away from somebody, or maybe she had made other plans. She was just going to peace out. So at 2:30, she crashes into the guardrail on Route 9 and does $10,000 worth of damage. So this is the weekend before her other wreck.
Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't $10,000 worth of damage to a Corolla be,
like
everything?
So, no charges. Police come out. They don't even do a breathalyzer. This is a college student leaving a party and wrecks a car. So they still don't even do a breathalyzer.
That makes no sense.
Maybe it was 001 who responded to this call. Who knows?
Well, because we don't know how far she got. How far? Well,
no,
she
no,
because
she was still, she was still at UMass.
It was too far.
That wouldn't be way too coincidental.
That's right.
But, no breathalyzer, no charges. No, she just gets driven to the hotel room, dropped off. Dad gets woken up to the news of, hey, car's been crashed.
That would have...
Totaled.
Yes, that would have not made me happy as a parent.
And he was kind of ill about it, but he found out insurance was going to cover it. So they were going to cover the damage. They were going to talk about it. And, she had some forms to fill out, some accident papers or something she had to go pick up from the register of DMV, however it works up there.
And she wasn't hurt.
She wasn't hurt.
Okay.
So he called her at 11:30 that night before the accident to remind her that this is what we have to do. We have to go over these forms. We're going to go over them the next night.
Okay.
But then that's the day she went missing.
Okay.
So they never got to do all that.
Oh, wow.
So February 5th. So this is a couple of days before her dad visits, before the accident. We're going back a little bit. She's at work. I don't remember what she did. I think she worked at the bookstore at the university or something like that.
Okay.
In an office. It's been a while. There's a lot of information on this case.
She's making sure I can answer questions.
Trying to condense it. As soon as I said she's at work, you're going to go, where she work? She works somewhere at the university.
Probably work study. Or
work study, bookstore, or something. She gets a phone call at work, and, she's visibly shaking. She's upset, so much so that her supervisor is go home. Obviously, something has happened. You're worried.
She got this call when?
At work on February 5th.
Okay.
The only thing she would say was, my sister.
Hmm. Okay.
Nothing about what happened, nothing about what happened to the sister. She just said, my sister.
Okay.
But then starts breaking down in tears, 3 hours later. So it was obvious that something had bothered her. And, they said she went, catatonic, staring at the wall, obviously not able to do her job, upset. So she, escorts her to her dorm room. The supervisor takes her to her dorm to make sure she gets where she's going. And she gets let off that shift.
Okay.
For the night. So we won't find out until 10 years later in 2017 what the sister was actually talking about.
Oh, okay.
So it was the sister. It was Kathleen. She called because she was having some trouble with alcohol addiction, abuse, and she had just left she just graduated a rehab facility.
This is the one at West Point.
Got picked up. No, this is Kathleen. This is the other one.
Okay.
Julie's the one at West Point.
Okay.
So this was Kathleen called to say that she had just got out of rehab and her boyfriend picked her up, and to celebrate, he took her straight to a liquor store.
Oh, my word.
And she relapsed and mixed it with sleeping pills and was, calling her in the middle of all that.
Okay.
Which was devastating probably on everybody's end, because then she's really worried about her sister. You go through these programs to get help, and then someone drives you right back into where
exactly
you don't want to be.
Oh, my goodness.
So, boyfriend Billy. So, Billy's at West Point with Julie. So, the morning that she disappears, she sends an email to Billy.
Okay.
She also sent the email to the professors.
About being
being absent. She sends an email to Billy.
That
just said, got your messages. Talk to you soon. Love you.
Huh.
Like, I don't know why you can't call. I don't know why you have to send an email.
Right.
It's a little bit detached, but like, hey, got your message. Apparently you've been trying to call and she just wasn't answering or something.
Okay.
So she's like, got your messages. Like, we'll call later. Love you.
But then
then 1 hour later she calls and leaves a voicemail that was like, love you, miss you, we need to talk.
We need to talk. What's that?
Probably because of what Julie's been telling me and all these fights that we've been having about.
Exactly.
So who knows what that was about. Because we never get to find out.
So we don't find out.
We don't anything. Find out.
Billy doesn't say anything about...
Billy doesn't say anything. He does say something later on, but...
Okay.
So it's like, where in the world was she heading?
Yes.
So the morning of her disappearance, she's very busy that day.
Okay, can you answer that? Do we find out where
she's
heading?
No, no one knows where she's going. That's the thing. I think that's one of the biggest issues is no one knows why she was going when she was going.
This has had to be torture for her family. And then Kathleen probably still struggling with addiction, poor thing.
So the morning of her disappearance, she actually called a few places. She was researching on her computer, looking up Burlington, Vermont, looking up hiking maps in New Hampshire. Called a place to ask about a booking. And she never books anything, but she's looking for stuff in that area.
Okay.
So was she going, she packed a bag for a vacation. Was she going to meet somebody? Was she just going out on her own to hike for a bit? She's an avid hiker. So her dad says she loves that area. But she never really booked anywhere. But in her car, they found a map to Burlington, Vermont. And her dad believed she was probably heading to, I think it was Berkeley, New Hampshire. He thinks she was going to New Hampshire. Something about White Mountain, like a particular hiking spot she really liked or something like that.
Okay.
But still, no one really knows 100% where she was headed. But there's a lot of stuff that was going on. So there's this, like, convenience store near the turn that this red truck that delivers wood was, like, hanging out, driving real slow, like being suspicious. So much so that one of the clerks had mentioned it and asked somebody about it. And then it goes on down the, like it passed them really slow and goes on down the road. And then a few minutes later, or maybe like 10 minutes later, they see the police cars, the ambulance, and the fire trucks going to the accident.
Okay.
But no one of the witnesses mentions anything about the red truck.
That would be very significant.
Just Butch Atwood's bus and then that lady who said she saw the police cruiser.
So, a red truck is memorable,
so
I think. And a police cruiser. You're not going to forget that either.
Yeah, so that's my next note. 001, like, where does the police cruiser? She didn't just make that up.
No.
I mean, that number is the chief of police.
And she didn't even think anything
and she,
about
and
it
she
until
called
she saw
after
it on
the fact.
News.
Yeah. So, and I can't imagine why someone would be, like, just randomly making up stuff like that. Oh, right. Hey, yeah, that wreck the other day, this is what I saw.
Right.
I don't know.
So, I don't know. The world we're living in, anything's possible.
Yes. But now, there's another voicemail. So Billy, hearing word of what's happened, turns off his phone the day after he gets news that she's gone because he's on a plane.
Okay.
Cuts off his phone, he's on the plane ride down to help search. When he cuts the phone back on, he has a voicemail. It was from a number he didn't recognize. But he says, quote, I could only hear breathing, crying, and then whimpering. I know that was Mara. So, they determined that the call came from an AT&T calling card. Billy's mom gave Mara 2 calling cards like a month before.
Oh, wow.
But police have officially said that they traced that back to like the Red Cross. But Billy's mother and her father, Fred, Billy's mom, her dad, have had private investigators look into it, and they can't trace it anywhere. So, like, how can the police say, like, oh, it was just a Red Cross?
Yes.
So, that seems very suspicious.
And the FBI didn't get anywhere with tracing it, or... Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it came from an AT&T calling card, which she had 2 of in her wallet.
Right. So, it's almost like she was able to get a phone
and dial
it.
His number, yes. But then she couldn't get any. Like, it was a voicemail because he was already on the way down.
Wonder if she went breathe, like, why she didn't say, help me, or whisper something.
Maybe she couldn't. Maybe all she could do was punch in the numbers. Who knows?
Yeah.
No one knows what was on the other end. But it gets even crazier.
Oh, no, because that sounds like she could have been taken.
Yeah, I get chills there,
yes.
But that's, yeah.
Captured against her will.
So there's even more to this story.
Oh, my goodness.
In just a moment. All right, you ready for it to get a little weirder?
Yes.
Okay. So, this happened in February of 2004. Late 2004, it does not say when, so maybe October, maybe November, I do not know. Just late 2004, a man gets in touch with Fred, who is her dad.
Okay.
And he just happens to have a story to tell, and he has an item he's going to give Fred. He said, yeah, so I think my brother may have killed your daughter, and here's a knife.
Oh, my goodness.
So this person had reported that his brother lived in an A-frame house by the accident in the woods.
So here's my thing. Why didn't he call the police first instead of Fred? But
I don't know. So he reported that his brother started acting weird around the time that the news broke out this girl was missing.
Did he drive a red truck?
I don't know what he drove, but he said he found this bloody knife, or rusted, stained knife, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
In his brother's car, and I guess he took it, bagged it, and gave it to Fred.
Whoa.
Who then sent it to the police department.
Okay, so this brother acted strange around this time frame.
Yes.
Of her missing.
Who lives in an A-frame house by the accident.
In the woods.
In the woods.
Okay.
So Fred turns it over, and nada. He can't get any information about if it's been tested, what was on it, where did it, like, what was, anything. Like, the knife, like, they got confirmation the package was delivered, but that's it.
Whoa, that would really make me upset.
Like, they can't even just say, hey, man, like, it was deer blood, or
exactly,
there's nothing on it, or, like, we don't know where it came from. Nothing.
That was the fall of 2004 that this happened, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So then there's word that a backpack matching her description of her, that matches her backpack, had been found very close to the site. And so he tries to get information about that. And the only thing that they will have been released, or they say, is we know about the backpack. Well, know what about the backpack? Is it her backpack?
I'm not.
Or is it not her backpack?
So they're not helping him at all.
So then he asked for all the reports to be released. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see everything that's in her case file. Of course, that hasn't happened. So, in October 2006, they finally searched the A-frame house. This is like 2 years later.
After.
They go search the house. Dogs hit on a closet upstairs that kind of gives them the impression that remains may have been there. Because obviously they're not in the closet, because they're in the closet. But they do remove two stained pieces of carpet. So pieces of carpet are cut, and they're sent to the lab.
Okay.
So nada. No report of, nothing. Like, can't get any information about that. So in 2016, we're now 10 years later,
yes.
Private eyes return to the home. They're granted access. And they find bloodstains on the wall and on the door frame. So they cut all that out and they send it off. So then they get the test back from those. Because remember, these are Private Eyes who did this.
Right.
They get third party like funding and they paid to have these tests done. They come back. There's two blood from two different people. One's a male and one is inconclusive. The material is too degraded and it's too small of a thing to test.
That's
again,
terrible.
This is 2017. If they had known there was a freaking A-frame house in the woods, they could have like, hey dogs, go run loose for a little bit, or
right.
I mean, it would have been fresh.
Right. Oh my
Sorry
goodness.
For
especially,
you.
Especially with the 2004 of the guy turning in the knife. They could have done something.
I mean, 2004, why wait till 2016?
Right, yes.
Exactly. Why? I mean, I love police, and I love that they do what they do, and I love that they help catch these people and keep these people off the streets when they can. But sometimes it makes you go, why?
Well, in this different jurisdictions,
yes.
You gotta think, like, sometimes I think about being in my area and around here, but we gotta think about other areas. You know, it could have been rural. You just don't know, and
I mean,
exactly.
And maybe this A-frame house was, like, not easily seen from the road. Maybe no one knew about it. Maybe this guy was, like,
exactly. I'm sure there
hermit
was
hermit in the woods who didn't come out very often.
But,
who wasn't,
I mean,
well
you would think some of the neighbors would be like, yeah, there's a guy.
Hey, there's a guy
there.
That lives in this building over here.
Especially since there's two.
And he had a car.
Two bloods, different blood stains with different types, so.
I
don't either. And I do get, it is frustrating. There's a lot of great police agencies, but yet there's still some poor ones. Because I can think about some of your poorer counties. And but still, the FBI got involved, so that's what's confusing too.
But in 2021, about 25 miles east of the accident, remains were found. However, they were not Mara. So they were determined that they were, like, older remains that died, like, between the 1700s and, like 1900s.
Oh, so they weren't anything.
So they weren't anything. But it was like, oh, this might be it, and not it.
This guy, though, is sketchy. I wonder if him and his brother have a relationship.
One, does he own a red truck? Did you find the knife
and
in a red truck?
And what's up with the blood that they found? I'm sure he said, well, somebody just cut themselves, or I haven't lived here.
And if it's not enough for you, the carpets aren't soaked underneath and, like, you can't tell anything happened, I mean, you can't. Like, I visited my dad's house. There's been blood on the wall because he knocked into the wall and, like, cut his arm or something. Right. And, like, what'd you do here, Dad?
Yeah.
But if you didn't know and it was 10 years later, you'd be like, oh, man, what happened here? Like, we got to test this.
So any follow-up on anything?
No, it's still a mystery.
Wow, that breaks my heart.
No one knows what happened to Mara.
His family's had to suffer, and probably, who knows, decisions that were made that wouldn't have been made if she had been found, and it just breaks my heart. So
there's only a couple of missing persons cases that really, really make me, like, this one stays with you, because where'd you go? You had 10 minutes went by,
exactly.
And you were there, and then you're not there.
Yes, and there's no footprints.
And there are footprints in the snow, no.
So, but a car. Nothing. It sounds like somebody picked her up.
So was she on her way to meet somebody, and then she couldn't call to say she got in a wreck because she had no cell service.
True.
So were they just on the way to meet her halfway there and, like, snatched her in the car and went? I mean, she took her wallet and her phone and her keys. They were all with her. But there's no bank activity because she drained her account before she left.
Right. Somebody took her. I mean, that's what it sounds like. That somebody took her.
More.
Especially
with
no footprints leaving the scene.
And the dog stopping at, like, the road. Like, she had to have gotten to a car.
That's right. Well, thank you for, it does break your heart because you don't want to hear missing
There's another one, if I can think about it. I cannot remember his name, but that also involves a car and, like, a really tight timeline. But yeah, this is, we don't know where Mara went.
And her dad fighting all these years. Mm-hmm. Keep it up, Dad. We hope that you can get some closure.
And I hope Kathleen is doing well. I didn't see a follow up of her situation.
Yeah. And the other siblings. And is there a
mom? Julie and Curtis.
I didn't mention
mom.
Breaks my heart. So, well, thank you guys for joining us again.
Yep, you can join our Facebook group, and you can email us if you have suggestions or you know something of this case, or know of this case, if there's been any more updates that I didn't mention, or you're in the area and you hear things that we didn't talk about,
yes,
just let
please.
Us know. You can email us at oldtimecrimegals@gmail.com. You can catch us next time. We'll be here with another story at some point. I'll put that in there because life happens. But in the meantime,
if you do the crime, it'll catch up with you in time.
And we'll talk about it. Until next time.